So are you getting charger fitted at home, or are you fudging a 30 amp cable to adapt?
I'll stick with the 30 amp plug for now. The charger will probably come, but I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah.
We've got other electrical stuff that needs doing in the house first.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's such a good network for those anyway. So
we'll see how it goes. Excited for it though.
Yeah, we're fudging with ours with a cable.
So long as you don't need it to charge in 20 minutes, there's no real reason why you have to go.
We don't. I mean, ours is an old Renault anyway. It's
right.
Yeah, it's 10 years old. So I don't think it could. I mean, yes, it could charge faster on a heavy duty circuit, but it's still. Yeah, it charges overnight. Yeah, from kind of depending on the weather, because the temperature makes a difference. So yeah, generally it'll charge overnight because it's only a small. It's only got a nickel battery.
Yeah,
it's only nickel. Yeah, it's only got 70-75 mile range. But it's a commute. It's a tiny little car. It's a tiny little Zoe. So it's a little commuter car.
If that's what you use it for, then it's ideal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always exactly.
Run into town a few times a week, then once a week, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's my wife's daily commute. Charge it twice a week. Yeah.
Great.
Does nice.
Perfect. Work. That's all you need then,
hey? Yeah. There is an adapter thing you can 3D print, I know, for the Tesla charging thing. That locks the charging cable into the Tesla because there's an issue with people unplugging them and stuff like that. And somebody's developed a thing that you can slot over the cable that you can 3D print that means you can't or something. I don't quite know how it works, but
cool. Okay,
it's worth exploring. You've got the printers, Duncan. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's something that's supposed to lock the cable in somehow where people could previously pull them out.
So. Interesting. Yeah, because ours locks. Yeah, ours locks. What's the same?
I'm going to have to try and find it now and send it over. Unless it was like for old ones that, you know, whether it was like there was a first gen where it didn't lock in or something like that, maybe that's what it was
working for. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll have a hunt and see if I can find it. Send over to you.
I saw a little vid earlier where it was like an instructional thing. You have to press and hold a button before you can pull it out. So from that, I just assumed that it locked in.
Yeah, I guess it probably must do.
Yes, well, we have to. It's the same button. There's one inside and there's one on the key fob that will open and latches the our charger's underneath the front badge.
Right. So
front and center. So you press the button, badge just lifts up slightly. You pull it open. There's another little cap. You open that and then you plug into that. As soon as you plug it in, it locks.
Right.
And then to release it, you press the button either internally on dash or on the key fob and then it unlocks.
Yeah, you see that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the little tip, it depends on what cables you got. Our charging cable has a little rubber boot that goes over the end of the charger once it's disconnected. Presumably, if you're kind of keeping it stored outside, we keep ours in the boot. It's the easiest thing to do. The boot cover little just hangs down, of course, when you put it plugged into the car. Put it down so that it's the open side is down on top of the charging port once it's actually in. Otherwise, if it's raining, it fills up with water.
Yes. I have to say, with the funny games I had with my windscreen over the last month, I'm getting really paranoid every time it rains now. And it's fine, they fixed it properly now. But every time it rains, I'm like, oh no, here we go again. But yes.
Yeah, for my windscreen does not sound like much fun at all.
How many did you end up having? Was it three?
I had three new windscreens in 3 weeks and a brand new entire headliner the week after.
Yeah.
So. That was exciting.
A friend of mine at the men's shed I go to had similar issues with their motorhome.
All right.
I think, well, yeah, had three done. At some point between the second and third, they managed to break wires for reversing lamp, reversing camera, and something else. So there was something that didn't work. I don't know what it was now. Thought it was all fixed, and then last week went for a drive, first drive since it had been fixed, and was about 3 or 4 miles from home, and the windscreen cracked. While driving, no impact, just literally driving along and
just cracked. Wow.
So yeah, he had to get back onto the windscreen provider that supposedly covers the whole country.
So interestingly, I discovered in all of my shenanigans with this that my insurance company own the windscreen company.
Oh.
The windscreen company are not an independent business. They are a sister company of the insurance company, both owned by a parent company. And yeah, it makes it a bit interesting because they were like, well, we can't do anything, but you need to talk directly to them. And I was like, but my contract's with you. And they're like, it doesn't matter. It's the same. And it was like, all right, okay. So yeah. You can't complain to your insurance about the windscreen company if they own the windscreen company, because they don't really care. It's good.
Wow.
That's a bugger.
Yeah.
Don't they have had a windscreen, one of those little epoxy chip kits done once? I think the only other problem I've ever had with a windscreen was we bought a Ford Focus Estate. Sort of been in early noughties, and with a few days it poured with rain, and there was a great big puddle of water in the passenger footwell. Apparently it's a bit of a classic issue. Luckily it was within a few days of buying it, so it was like new, but yeah, second hand. But we took it back to the kind of dealer and went, no, fix it. And they fixed it. Apparently it was a relatively known issue. But it's always kind of a little nag then. For, like you say, you've had no problem since you've had the third windscreen.
Yeah.
But every time it rains, you're kind of thinking, oh, is it going to go again? We were like that for months afterwards.
Yeah. And I think the only saving grace that I've got is the fact that I know that the Land Rover body is aluminium. So I was left going, if there's loads of water, because there was loads of water in the A-pillar and everything. And I was like, oh, no, this is a nightmare. But then I was like, actually, it's aluminium, so it's not going to rust.
No.
So there's at least that as a thing. And then my second concern was that I was going to end up with the headlining going moldy. Mm. And then they very carefully set that on fire, trying to put the third windscreen in. So I had to replace it. So in some ways, we've solved both those problems. But yeah, not the way I planned to.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know where you guys drive to get all these windscreens. I've never had one go.
So
30,000 miles a year for nearly 15 years, and I've never had a problem.
They're building up on the main road near us. They're building 750 new houses. And the number of trucks and everything going along that road now is insane. And I was just coming along there. Rock came up, chipped over on the passenger side. So I was like, oh, I'll get to that at some point. Like, probably needs doing before the MOT, but I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
Got 200 meters down the road and it suddenly just turned into this big, like, 300 mil crack. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I guess I'm fixing that one. But no, it's the first one I've ever had to do. I've not had to do them before, but yeah.
One was a stone chip motorway or something. Yeah, just driving along, just crack. Yeah, something's flicked up or it's come out of a tyre. The only other one we had, which didn't need doing because it's a little bit small, was as a result of some local young people of a certain type using certain types of catapults.
The youths.
Yeah.
Youths having fun.
Yes. Yeah.
We were
lucky that somebody else about 200 meters from us who lost their entire back window.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah, I think we were lucky because I think we just had a little stone, whereas they may have had a half inch ball bearing.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put a golf ball through my grandparents' patio door once. Because I was showing off.
You know who doesn't have issues with chips in their windscreen? It's the Formula One.
That's true.
They don't have windscreens. That would be what we're competing with this evening, is the Formula One.
Yes. I watched almost exactly half of it.
Yeah, I was like, do I keep it on a screen off to the side? And I'm like, no, it's going to be really obvious I'm distracted to watch.
I've watched Formula One in years.
You don't want a stone chip in your visor, do you really?
No.
Can you imagine? That would
it's probably handle it better than glass would, actually. It must be sort of some kind of,
I presume there's some
they're polycarbonate or, well, you know, Lexan style stuff. So they're fairly pretty much bulletproof. And then they've got all those, they have the cover switches on, don't they? So when they get a bit dirty or steamed up,
they can tear offs.
Throw that away. Yeah.
Why not throw it into the intake? Yeah.
Yes. You saw that thing with Lewis Hamilton as well. Did you? He was talking about having to be really careful where you let go of it, because if you let go too high, it goes into your engine. If you let go too far off to the side, it'll get sucked into the brake duct.
Yeah.
So there's like an exact place you have to let go of it, but then it's basically Mario Kart for the guy behind you, because he's then trying to avoid.
Yeah. Can't they just dump it on their lap? Yeah. It's just.
There was a thing that they tried for a little while of having a little pocket inside the cockpit. I'm not sure why that got abandoned.
It was probably weight issues.
But they did try something.
Yeah.
Weight issues. Yeah. Shed a few grams quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I need to accelerate faster. Wipe them all off.
Yeah.
Earlier today, people listening won't know this, but earlier today we were discussing different options to a certain high-performance car that one of our friends is looking at.
Yes.
And one of the options that came up, which I didn't put into the group chat, was the Aerial Atom. It's probably wants a little bit more protection from the weather than.
Let me just Google what this looks like. I think it's like a kit car type thing, right?
It's a skeleton. Yeah.
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 It's a track car.
Road legal.
Yeah, it's fully
it's a track car.
Yeah. I've only ever seen one once on the road. The guy was in it, sitting in it, was wearing a shirt and tie. And trousers and shoes, but he was literally sitting in the 5-point harness.
But that's
jet guy.
Not to judge him, but that's a man who starts every conversation with everybody with, when I was driving here in my Aerial Atom, just to make sure he gets that into the conversation. Like,
on the way here, I got 4 flies in my eye.
I was kind of giving the benefit of the doubt and thinking, maybe it's a furs safety tie.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, just likes driving his Aerial Atom. He had a bit of a midlife crisis, but thought, I don't trust myself on 2 wheels.
Yeah.
Let's get 4, but pretty much the same performance.
Yeah. At similar levels of protection around you. Yeah.
Slightly better. Yeah, if you have a prang, you're probably not going to. Leathers would probably be nice, and a helmet would be nice, but you probably wouldn't survive a bit better than taking a prang on a bike.
I suspect if I was to try driving an Aerial Atom, I'd look a bit like Donkey Kong. That's probably not the way to go. I'm designed for big cars, let's put it that way.
In my previous job, I had a client over in Kent who was a lovely guy, and we kind of became friends, and I got invited to a AC Cobra event. Very nice. At Goodwood. And nice. I took the kids, and it pissed down with rain all day, but it was brilliant. It was just really good fun. It was something we'd never been to before, never seen anything like it. It was a private members meet, so it wasn't a public event. And there's a picture of me sat in an AC Cobra.
With the windscreen, like, here.
With my head above the roll cage.
Yeah.
No chance. No yeah. chance. Yeah.
I used to have a colleague, one of the best colleagues I've ever had. He was a really good physics teacher. And he, I think, is exactly the same height as you, Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
And he, not, it wasn't the car he started when I first started. I employed him. I kind of sort of hired him in terms of I was head of department that went, this guy, please. But he changed car about a year later, I think it was, and bought an MX-5. He could just about squeeze in it. I think, yeah, he had a Fiat before that. Yeah, he had this MX-5. It's just like, you could see him driving down the road. Yeah, head was definitely above.
Yeah, that. A friend of mine, years and years ago, when I was about 20, had an MX-5, and I couldn't get in it, really. Not even as a passenger, not be comfortable, you know. I could squeeze in, but yeah, I couldn't drive one, I don't think.
I don't know how he did it.
Not to own one. If I had to drive one for like a short trip, that'd be fine. But I wouldn't buy one. Why would you do that? You're 6'6" and you buy an MX-5.
Yeah.
Well, then you deserve the pain.
I was a mechanical engineer by training, so yeah, maybe something to do with that. I don't know.
So surely he understands the physics of things fitting and other things.
The irony wasn't lost on us. Yeah, the rest of us. Yeah.
Brilliant. So,
but yeah, that, I mean, people steering with his knees for the obvious reasons. Probably more like his calves. Probably, yeah, the length of his legs. I mean, it was always fascinating to me how he didn't even notice that he was doing it, because of course it was just natural. Whenever he walked through into into the prep room where we had our desks, he would duck. Because of course, by the time he's 6'6", and then he's got half inch, 3/4 inch thick shoes on. And he just automatically, every doorway, unless it was a super big doorway, just automatically just ducked.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's just fascinating to watch, actually, just to watch that. I mean, the number of years he would have, of course, practiced.
That should put us all in a zoo, Andy.
Yeah. All those tall people folks
ducking under things.
The giraffe enclosure.
I don't know how old he was, but if he was in his 40s, that's 30 years of banging his head on stuff.
You see, he's probably about... Yeah, he's about the same age as you guys. Yeah. Well, same as you, Duncan. Neil, I know you're a bit old.
Well, then it's 20 years of banging your head on stuff. It's still a long time. It's just a well-developed habit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, here's the crazy thing.
Learned the hard way as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
used to have hair.
At the time, fiancé bought their first house together. And they bought a cottage with beams. The beams were less than 6'6".
On you go. We've agreed in this house. I've already had it passed, right? We need a new kitchen within the next 3 years, maybe. And the worktops are going to be an inch higher.
Oh, good on you.
Because
so this is a really interesting thing, because I'm building some furniture. I've got a couple of commissions for some furniture builds I'm doing. And I'm building furniture for people who are significantly shorter than me. And it's fine because I know in theory what height they want things at. But it's really disconcerting to make like a desk and sit at it and feel uncomfortable. Mm. But then shipping that desk to somebody as a finished product. And it's that having to remember but she's like almost a foot shorter than me. So the fact that like I have my desk quite high, like it's not a sit stand desk. I want to do that at some point, but it's blocked up with some 2x4s to get this desk to a height that's nice. But it's that whole thing where like making her a desk, and it's like, this is like knee height. This does not work for me. But in theory, it works for her, but she lives down south, so there's no way of her testing it. So it feels really strange to me building furniture to spec rather than comfort.
Yeah, because you can't really test it yourself, right?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are books on kind of
the standards
to different people, isn't it? And standards.
Yeah. And I followed all the standards. She measured a desk she sat at and felt comfortable at, so we've matched that height. And, you know, on paper, all of this works. But I'm looking at it going, nope, that's uncomfy. So
hopefully she likes it when it arrives.
If not, I'll find a way of adding a bit to all the legs. But, yeah.
those little rubber feet. Yeah, those little rubber feet that you've got on things. Yeah.
Screw them out 200 mil off the bottom. Add a hairpin leg to the bottom of each of the existing legs. Yeah.
Yes.
Threaded insert with a screw action foot.
Yeah.
With one of those little swivel, the little ones with the ball end, the swivel cup.
Yeah.
Oh. They work nicely. I used to find this in science labs. Because depending on the type of the science lab, but if you don't have a lot of science labs, ignoring the ones where they have those stupid pods where everyone sits in little groups and everything's all fixed. But what a lot of science labs will have now is some fixed pods with services, gas and water, sink, and then they will have movable tables. So you've got flexibility to kind of move things depending on what you want to do. And they will nearly always have adjustable feet in some way. And the number of times we kind of sort of got given the new lab, and I then have to spend a couple of hours just going around adjusting all the feet to A, get rid of the wobble, because there'd always be feet that were out of sort of step, and B, adjusting them so they were all the same height and actually matched with the pods, just because it's wrong for them not to be.
It's the reason when I bought my lathe, I didn't buy the leg set that comes with it, because actually to get it to a height I want, the leg set that Record Power make doesn't work. So I ended up just putting it onto a bench, but I guess that's the sort of thing that must be frustrating at things like Men's Shed or like makerspaces, is where you would naturally tailor something to what's comfortable for you. And I mean, we've been talking about height. I'm sure there's plenty of other ways in which people tailor it to what works for them. But I guess you can't do that in makerspaces or shared workshops.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything at the local makerspace is fairly just sort of standard workbenches, really. I don't know that anything's really customized, even in my own garage. I guess the worktop's a little bit higher, probably.
Yeah, my benches are higher than standard, because it's easier for me to work slightly higher up.
Mm.
But then certain operations, it would be easier if they were lower. So generally, if you're trying to saw something with a handsaw, having it slightly lower is generally slightly easier than higher up. But most of the time my desks or benches in the Tinkerage are higher. And at one point they were two different, they still are two different heights. So my kind of woodworking bench is actually slightly higher than the lathe bench. And the lathe bench previously had been my electronics bench, and that had been slightly higher than the woodworking bench because I wanted the electronic stuff higher up. But that's a function not of my height, but my back. So it's kind of easier to kind of operate at a higher level.
If that's better for your back and you're a fairly is it fair to say, average height?
Yeah, I'm 5'7" now, 5'7" and a bit. Used to be 5'8".
More comfortable for you, for your back, why aren't all workbenches like that then? If that's better for people.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of furniture stuff is just the size it is because
that's it's always been that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the chair that I'm sat in, quite fancy, expensive PC chair. And I bought it because I've always struggled with finding a chair that I'm comfortable in for a long period of time. And they did two different sizes. So they did the standard size and they did an XL. And I hadn't paid attention to the dimensions properly. And I bought the XL because it was a little bit taller than the standard one, but I hadn't actually compared it to the chair that I'd already got. And it arrived and it was too low. It was too low to the ground. Yeah. It was supposed to be this XL chair that's like big in all dimensions, and it wasn't. So I ended up having to replace the pneumatic cylinder on it anyway to a longer one to get it to the right height that's comfortable. Yeah. And it's the old classic of flights as well. Like,
yeah.
I bet you hate getting on a plane, Neil, because I love flying. I really enjoy flying. I hate the seat.
Yeah,
I hate it. If I'm in an exit row or at the front, absolutely fine.
Yeah,
really enjoy the process of getting on a plane. It's just, I just like it.
But if I can't
get that seat, it's ruined.
yeah. I mean, there's basically a height tax in that you have to pay extra to get a seat that's comfy.
I don't know how they get away with that. And it's I don't know how that's allowed.
When I look at all these things talking about, here's how we're now going to do like two layers of seats with people sat above the other, I'm like, well, I guess I'm just staying here then from now on. I like looking at that going, nah, it's not going to happen. But yeah, it's that pain in the knee. I tend to, if I can't get exit row, aim for aisle.
Yeah.
Then
that's second best, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I presume you know about the magic button on the underside of the armrests.
The magic button on the underside to lift the armrest.
So, any of the 737s or whatever, there's a button on the underside of the aisle edge armrest that means you can't actually lift it up, even if it's supposedly fixed in place. So you can do that, and then you can kind of swing the legs out into the aisle until they come down it with a trolley.
The stewards will destroy your knees with a trolley.
Yeah.
Asleep or not, they'll just carry on through.
Yeah. So this episode of Maker's Waffle is just a therapy session for me and Doug. this
is going on, isn't it? Let's complain about tall things.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it, since I've flown, but even as a kind of average sized bloke just flying, no, it's how you guys being taller. No, I don't know how you cope with it. Really don't.
But you're paying the extra
choice sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to go somewhere.
True.
The only sensible option is a plane, unfortunately.
Yeah, although I've been to train a lot more when I'm going to London recently. Because I worked out the train. By the time I get to the airport, through security, on the plane, like waiting for the plane, boarding the plane, fly down, get out the other end and everything. It's only about half an hour different for me to get the train from Edinburgh to King's Cross. And actually, I can get some work done on the train because I can just sit there and get the laptop out, get some stuff done. So I've been doing that a lot more rather than...
Yeah. There was a couple of occasions I had to fly up to Aberdeen for work, and the time to take a flight, by the time all the garbage around it had been done, it was probably about the same time to driving.
Yeah.
But a whole lot less effort.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is the train's more expensive now than flying, which seems utterly wrong for some reason. But
It is. I mean, it's not. I mean,
it's a proper old man gripe, though, isn't it? The price of trains these days. but yeah.
Yeah,
I noticed you're. Sorry,
I was going to say, I used to don't travel by train very much. I went somewhere yesterday, took the train. But I used to enjoy trains. I never used to mind waiting at stations and, yeah, even if there was a, oh, your train has been delayed, you've got another hour to wait. To be honest, I never used to worry about that too much, unless I was in kind of in urgent or had a dedicated time that I had to be somewhere and it was going to damage that. But normally I was early enough anyway. Mm. I used to enjoy trains. But yeah, I don't really go much places anymore. It's we were talking about it yesterday on the train coming back. There was a while where I commuted, not into London, but just took trains either locally. A couple of times I've done that where I've kind of taken the train regularly, you know, daily for months at a time. And there'd be the time, odd time when it's freezing cold or pouring with rain. It's like, I don't really want to walk half a mile to the station, but something just got, yeah, you just had to do it. But the regularity kind of suited me, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, before I interrupted you, what were you going to?
I was slightly going off at a tangent. I'm noticing, Duncan, that your local makerspace is now on TikTok. And
yeah, all
the social media's on TikTok.
Yes. Shout out to Chris at Make Gosport, because I think he runs most of the TikTok stuff. And they try and do the odd silly video. And
No, it's cool to see there's an awful lot of maker spaces that you don't really see much social stuff from, other than please come along. So it's nice to see some, I guess, some creative output onto social media from a makerspace is a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Yeah. I'm not sure how much traction it'll get, if any, but it's fun and it's nice to see. And
yeah.
I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, it's good. Maidstone have been, which is the local makerspace for me. I say local. It would take me, with the way traffic is around here, it would take me best part of an hour to get to. And it's tiny. They don't have very much room at all. So I haven't been along. I might try and get to one of their open evenings one day. They've started increasing their kind of output on Facebook, and they've started Discord. They were using some obscure, I say social media, it wasn't particularly social, but it was kind of almost like forum-based. It was popular amongst the sort of software dev world. Can't remember what it was called off the top of my head now, which I kind of had signed up for at one point, because I gave them a pile of electronics a few years ago. But they're actually kind of, they're using Facebook and they're using Discord now. So it's nice to see some of the
Discord's action. Great for stuff like that. Yeah, it's worked really well. Make Gosport's on Discord. Has been since I joined, and I was one of the early ones. And it works really well. And we've got an interesting project going on at the moment. It's been going on for a little while, because we're just sort of taking our time with it. But it's an access system. We've got RFID tags for the door.
Yeah.
So all the members have got a tag for getting into the door. And the idea is to put power switches on all of the machines that also operate with the RFID tag.
Okay.
And it's a way to manage
access who's rights.
Done inductions on what? You know, it's a safety system, basically. It won't go on everything, but it will go on things like the table saw. Going things like the CNC mill, the CNC router, the laser, stuff like that. So that people are inducted can get straight on there easily, but people that aren't can't. So that's nice. Progressing. So I'm doing the sort of the web servery side of things, and then there's another chap working on the hardware for it.
Cool.
And we're just at the point where we're sort of merging the two together now. So, I'd love to be able to share it as a design, as a basis for other spaces. And I think a couple have already got a similar system. Yeah, we'll try and make it as open as possible.
Yeah, I know there is one of the spaces over Glasgow way has a thing whereby they've modded university library photocopier cards. So where you can load it up with credits. So where they've got a fee that you would pay for using the laser or whatever, you can buy a certain number of credits, or they run like a competition once a month and best project wins 50 credits and things like that. But it means that people can then just swipe their card to use certain machinery and stuff like that. So yeah, that'd be a cool.
Yeah, it's a cool little thing. And once the sort of basics are in, you can expand it a bit. So we can have things like, because we plan to add the door onto this new system as well. And things like...
You've got to be inducted to use the door.
Yeah. You've got to have a second person in the building to use the table saw. Something like that, you know, or something like the laser that's got a board that manages the software on the laser. It's got an output on it for when the laser's on. Now, there's an extra charge for using the laser because of the tubes are expensive and stuff like that. So we can track the time and know who's using the laser for that time as well. At the moment, it's a trust system. Everyone just writes down what they use, and that works fine. But doing it automatically just takes people's memory out of the equation, right? You can't forget to write it down.
I'd love to see more output to like social media from a lot of the makerspaces, because I bet you there are so many interesting projects going on in them that you just don't hear about or see or anything like that. It'd be really cool if a lot more of the makerspaces started shouting out the projects they're doing and what people are working on and things like that. And maybe
I think the difficulty is it would normally have to fall to one person or two people to manage an account. They then have to be told what's going on and have some understanding of what's going on when they're not there.
Well, I mean, if you remove all the logical problems,
the person who's doing the project has to do a little write up for the social media person, right? So, it's a bit complicated.
Yeah.
But I can understand why it doesn't happen so much.
Yeah.
It can work. I mean, it works at small scale, obviously, it's fairly easy. I mean, we at the Make Menshed that I go to, we only meet for two mornings a week. Sometimes there's extra kind of sort of time goes in if there's a big project, but officially it's kind of a Tuesday morning and a Thursday morning. And officially it's sort of 10 o'clock till kind of sort of 12:30-ish. There's a few of us that kind of, I'm deputy workshop manager picks me up on the way on a Tuesday and Thursday morning most weeks. And yeah, we get there for sort of 10 past nine, sometimes a bit earlier. And if we've got delivery, it might be 8 o'clock if we've got delivery of wood. And for us, obviously it's a very small space. We've got, I mean, technically we've got two workshop spaces, because we've got a lathe room, but the main workshop space, it's 23 feet by 12 feet. Yeah, it's not a big space. Yeah, often it's, if you get five people working in there, it gets a bit hectic. So it's very easy to keep track of, who's working on what projects. And every week we've got a little newsletter, and I try and take photographs on finished projects or kind of interesting new things have happened. Take a photograph and it goes into the newsletter for those who either aren't interested in making but want to know what we are making. They're not interested in making for themselves, so they can keep a track on things. And there's a few people who can't make it every week, and so they can see what's going on. So we don't do a particularly big range of projects, and the stuff we do is mostly woodwork, and it's mostly fairly straightforward. Sometimes we might repair a lamp or something, or make a lamp, but that's about the extent of kind of electricals. So generally it's a bug hotel or a stool or a garden planter. It's fairly straightforward and simple. You don't need to explain to people what it is, because the name gives it away, or what it does. So that's fairly straightforward, but you know, that's because it's a limited amount of time with a limited amount of space, a limited number of people, and quite limited projects in terms of complexity. But if I, Duncan, if your system could be used to maybe make sure that tape measures and chisels get returned back to
their hammers,
get returned back
to license to print money if you could do that.
Yeah.
That would next, you'll be asking so for Sharpies time. To go back as well. That's
yeah, pencils. Yeah, I mean, that would just save so much time.
To be honest, even in my own workshop, I'd sign up for something that told me where the tape measure is most of the time.
I don't know if you've ever seen them, but there's something I've seen which could maybe apply. On a big industrial sites, they'd often have a key locker, and it'd be a huge cabinet, floor to ceiling, full of keys on pegs. And on every key ring is a little sort of like almost like a jack plug that goes into a hole in the board. And someone comes along, swipes their ID card on the cabinet, types in what key they want. The door opens, so they've got access to all the keys, but only the one they want is unlocked. A little green LED comes on next to it. And they take the key out, shut the door. So you know who's got that key, and that it's been like signed out. So now all you have to do is employ that kind of system and attach little plugs to all the tape measures and the rulers and the pencils. No.
Because the problem is, the answer is always going to be that I had it last. It's my issue that it's missing. Knowing that I lost it is not the problem here. I know I lost it. What I want is something that tells me where it is. I want something that can do me some kind of tracking down to a 100 mil square in my workshop. I need to set up like almost like what three words, but do it down to a like
half you need meter like by small half scale GPS. I'm sure that's across the thing. It must be.
Yeah.
Yeah, like almost the new miniature versions of kind of Apple tiles.
Yeah.
So you can literally sort of stick it on. Oh, no, I was trying to think.
You want something smarter than that. And like the old, do you ever seen those key rings that beep when you whistle or clap?
Yeah.
You want something like that, but a bit smarter, otherwise the whole workshop comes alive, didn't you?
Yeah, I was gonna say you need like a different sound for each of them. It become a very complex language just to
you have to whistle a particular tune for it to Bond film where he had an exploding pen that if he whistled kind of Rule Britannia, the pen
that sounds likely.
So that's what you need. You just need that in every kind of tool with a different tune for every tool.
Great. Small tool ending machine. Yeah. Can't get a new tool out until you put the first one back.
I think you'd be allowed two. So if you're measuring up, you might have a tape and a pencil. If you're chiseling something out, you may have a mallet or hammer. Yeah.
You're not allowed to swear as well.
That's set up permissions so that, you can have the relevant Allen key that adjusts the blade on whatever you've got, but you're not allowed more than that Allen key. Relies on you programming in the correct Allen key, because otherwise you sat there with a 5 mil when what you actually needed was something else. Yeah.
I've been trying to put the maintenance tools for machines on the machine.
Yes.
So our plenty of thickness are required. There's a, I can't remember what size it now, it's like an 8 mil spanner, a Phillips screwdriver and something else. There's an Allen key, I think 5 mil Allen key. So I kind of had them on a little pot on the side. The only problem I found with that is that sometimes people go, oh, I need a screwdriver. They'll take that one instead of taking the one that's on the wall with all the screwdrivers are.
I would do exactly the same in my own workshop. Like, I need an 8 mil Allen key. Oh, I know where there's one. On the drill press. And then it's gone and the whole system falls apart.
Yeah. I'm 99% sure that I would be a lot better behaved if I had to share my workshop. Like, I think half the problem is the fact it is only me in my workshop. So there's no reason not to just nick that one off there and use it.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to affect anybody else.
You're only accountable to yourself.
Yeah, I'd put more effort in if somebody else was using the space as well. But,
I've spent most of the time trying to design the organizational storage system so that everything has a place, but there are more places than there are tools, and getting rid of tools that we don't need, and so just kind of trying to streamline that sort of process. And it mostly works, but there's still, and most people are quite good about kind of going, I finished working now, I'll put everything away. But then you do get, I mean, obviously occasionally you get somebody who kind of just puts the tape measure in their pocket and walks off and goes home. Yeah, they bring it back, so it's generally okay. But I do get a little bit frustrated because it's like on the tape measures, we've got four tape measures in the workshop. We've got quite a chunky 8 meter, we've got 2 5 meters, and we've got 1 3 meter. And I've got four slots, one wide one, 2 medium-sized, 1 narrow one. And it's like, every now and again, somebody will put the 5 8 meter tape in the 3 meter one because that's out, or the 3 meter one in the 5 meter. It's just like,
yeah, but what you didn't see, the same Andy, slot. Yeah, what you didn't see is them turn to somebody else and go, watch what Andy does when I do this.
Totally. Yeah.
Do you get, either in the makerspace or in the men's shed, do you get people borrowing tools for home projects and things? Is it like either officially or just things wander for a week and then suddenly appear back?
Both.
Generally, the owner of the makerspace does that, and it drives me insane. Okay. Because I'll go in, I'm looking for a particular thing. I think it was a while ago that I had this issue, to be fair. I was looking for the pocket hole screws. And I'm looking around, and they've been moving stuff around and rearranging things. And I'm like, right, okay, I don't know where they are anymore. I'll just have a hunt, right? So I spend like 40 minutes looking for pocket hole screws. Eventually get fed up and pop a message on the Discord. And then Paul will come out and go, oh yeah, I borrowed them for a job. Why?
I was in early a week before last. I got in earlier than normal because the workshop manager was on holiday, so I drove myself in. And I tend to go in a bit earlier just get out of the way and avoid the sort of the school traffic, because it kind of normally often coincide with that. And We shut down properly and we open up properly every sort of time. So everything is put away, all the blinds get closed, and everything gets unplugged and all that sort of business at the end of the day. And the start of the session, one of the reasons why we get in early is we get the heating on, we get the lights on, we get the water heater on, and just those little things that take a bit of time to warm up, and plug things in that need. We don't plug everything in to sort of start with, but things like the air cleaner, as soon as we get in, blinds go up, lights go on, heater goes on, air cleaner goes on. It's kind of part of the routine of sort of setting up. And I leave little jobs for myself for the next time if I'm right, okay, I'm gonna do this. So we've got a rule as well, similar to the one mentioned earlier, of no power tools to be used if you're the only person in the, in fact, no sharp tools. So if you were just fixing something with a screwdriver, not a problem, but you're not expected to be using saws, chisels, planes you'd probably be okay with. We haven't specifically written that sort of rule down, but definitely
nothing too stabby.
Nothing too stabby, and nothing that's going to kind of people are going to walk in and find your body on the floor. That's the general kind of consensus. I was kind of sort of just sort of going around, sort of switching things on, tidying things up. It was like, there's a chisel missing off the rack. We've got three. I made three chisel racks, and there's only enough places for the chisels, and every chisel's got its own place for the depend on the size of it. It's like, there's a chisel missing, and I knew there'd been somebody working on a an additional project and had been coming in kind of extra time. So with obviously other people. So I thought, they just haven't put it away. And I thought, right, I'll go and have a little check around. And because there's different places, and it's like, yeah, we've got one of our workbenches is one of those kind of woodworking benches with kind of, yeah, a side vise and an end vise. And then there's a little trough at the back where sort of tools roll into. Like, checking through that, there's bits of sandpaper in there that we often just leave in there. So, like, nothing under the sandpaper. There's a bench that's covered in tools at the moment. I thought, well, maybe it's been left on that. It's engineering. I'm still working on organizing that. So I checked that, then went out into the main hall where we're kind of mostly social, but there's some wood stuff gets put and some people work on assembly, not cutting or anything, but just sort of assembly type stuff. Went into there, checking through the kind of thing, no, not in there. Just like went to the lathe room, checked in there. It must have been about kind of 35, 40 minutes looking for this sort of chisel. So I was kind of cussing under my breath and kind of, you know, calling people out. You know, well, I was probably so-and-so, and it's just like, and I was just like, the next guy came in then, and it's just sort of, he was often early, and he usually sort of starts the teas and coffees off. And I said, hey, how are you doing? Everything all right? He says, yeah, just a little bit kind of, just a bit kind of knocked, because there's a chisel gone missing since last time. And it was just like, oh yeah, I borrowed that. Could have written it somewhere, because I checked, because the policy up to now, we're changing the policy slightly. We can have a book, but up to now it's been, we have a sign-in sheet, and there's a new sign-in sheet every session, and it gets filed away. So I looked at the last sign-in sheet that was still out, because again, that's one of the first jobs to put that away. And I checked through the past couple of weeks just in case I'd missed it, and there was just like nothing on there, and it's just like, just kind of, yeah, very frustrating. So I was like, newsletter the following week, I was like, if you're borrowing tools, please make sure that you tell one of the workshop team, or at least the chairman. It is that sort of thing. You're sharing a workshop. If you were sharing a workshop, you would take more care to put things away and think, because that's what you do in a shared workshop. But not everyone gets that.
Not everyone thinks like we do.
So in one of the previous production companies I used to work in when I was doing events, they had a very high-tech system whereby every piece of kit down to like individual cables all had its own RFID tag on it. So you could load up a flight case of stuff, push it through a gate next to the loading door, and it'll print you off a list of everything that's in the case.
Wow. Ooh.
Which is very clever and lovely.
That's
very
cool.
And it means that when you've got like a case coming back in, you can immediately do a comparison and go, okay, what's missing? Because it knows what's in the case or not, whatever. And I mean, it, like, tens of thousands of pounds going into this, but it was worth it for them with the amount of kit going in and out and all of that. But it does leave me thinking you need something like that on the door whereby it can detect when somebody walks out with a... Or like these Amazon shops where you don't actually have to pay it. It detects what you've got as you walk out the door. You need something set up like that. So that,
yeah,
this person walked out with this, and everybody gets a message on Discord letting them know, just so that everybody's in the loop.
I mean that would be that would be nice. But if just having something this, nice. Yeah, just getting everything back in. I just don't get why people won't put things back. I mean, don't get me wrong, same as Union, but yeah, the tinkerage at the moment is a complete out of state. I've been doing some jobs in the house, trying to do some tidying up in the house, and so stuff that was previously not in the tinkerage is now in the tinkerage, and I haven't put it away as it's gone in. And yeah, I still haven't, I did a repair cafe thing last month, and I still haven't put away all the tools from that. It's like my drill index. I took a variety of drills with me, drill bits, and my drill index has still got all the empty spaces because I put them in a plastic bag, and they're still somewhere. Actually, I'm not sure exactly sure where. I need to find them, because the other day I went to go and drill something and couldn't find a drill bit. But, so you get, yeah, I'm not great at keeping my own place tidy, but yeah, I'm very good at keeping the men's shed tidy.
Yeah.
Same as when I was working in the school, you know, the, I used something in the prep room, or if I used something in the, yeah, it had, everything had its place and things went back into their place, especially knowing that perhaps other people would also be doing that. But yeah, I think it's about perhaps people not paying attention to kind of the needs of other people. Be practicing my segues. So yeah, I think that brings us kind of to our attention grabbers. So yeah, attention grabbers, things that have been grabbing our attention lately. So who wants to go first?
You go first, Andy.
Should I go first?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, you grabbing my attention. Went up to London town yesterday. Went to the we were meeting up, our eldest started university 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. So we hadn't seen them for since we dropped them off, basically. So we thought it'd be nice to meet up. It's half term. So we went up to London town and met up with them, and we had had lunch. I thoroughly recommend, particularly if you're if like us you have problems with gluten, Honest Burger, which is a kind of a chain. I don't know where they are apart from London. They're across London. I don't know if they're anywhere else. But really, really switched on. All their sides are gluten-free. And it was just like, yeah, we need gluten-free. And they were like, yep, that's fine. Yeah, little kind of disclaimer about, yeah, we understand that, yeah, they can't. They do have regular buns, for example. They only sell burgers, basically. And yeah, really, really tasty. Really, really good service. Great food. Lunch. But then we went to the Tate Modern. Spent the afternoon there. So that was definitely something to grab your attention. Yeah, it's a fantastic building. So if you're in London, if you've never been to the Tate Modern, it's worth visiting just from the architecture of the building itself. It's definitely, there's some great art, there's some classic art. I've never seen, I quite like Ray Lichtenstein's kind of the pop art, the kind of sort of Wham, Spitfire, that sort of stuff. There's several of his pieces there. Hadn't quite appreciated how big they are. They're great pieces to look at. Yeah, there's some other sort of classic. It's generally modern art, of course, but it's Tate Modern. Yeah, seeing a Mondrian, yeah, literally kind of, yeah, a meter away from a Mondrian is quite special. There's some controversial. There's some stuff you think, my child could have made that when they were six.
Yeah, modern art's weird.
I don't get it. There was some quite heavy hitting kind of social commentary type art as well. There were a couple of galleries that my wife didn't go into. Yeah, they had little kind of warnings saying things like, yeah, this contains scenes involving bloodletting. And it's like, okay. Or nudity and stuff like that. There's some quite heavy hitting stuff. Which is kind of, yeah, part of what art is about. Yeah, that whole kind of thing.
Yeah, I sort of do get more than the sort of, it's the abstract stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. And I have a
little diagonal canvas has been painted red. Just red.
Yeah.
Oh, that's £15 million, please.
That goes over my head, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that, yeah. Some of it you kind of, and particularly when you see multiple pieces together and you kind of go, ooh, yeah. So, yeah, it was definitely an attention grabber for me for this week.
Nice.
Neil, what about you? What's been grabbing your attention?
I have fallen down a couple of rabbit warrens of things this week. The first one, which probably speaks to my internal desires to escape the world, I've been watching a lot of YouTube channels of people going off and living in a cabin in the woods, or escaping to islands off the west coast of Scotland to live in
nice
little homesteads and things. Then spending time looking at estate agent websites and trying to work out how that would work. So there's been a lot of that, but one of the channels that I found, which I've been kind of getting into, is called Outdoor Boys, and it's quite simple. It's a dad and quite often his two kids, who are like age 6 and 9, going out camping. They live in Alaska, so off, you know, 8-foot snow drifts and camping and shooting and fishing and building shelter structures and things like that. So that's been kind of good. I don't know how he does it. He does a video every Saturday and they're all like an hour long. Which, given I'm struggling to knock out 3 videos in a year, that's kind of where it's at. But and then the other one is Gridfinity, which somebody mentioned to me last week.
Oopsie.
Yeah, that's your fault. And yeah, I guess tying in with the thinking about workshop tidying and structure and things like that. But
I'm on hand to do a little show and tell.
There you go. Like. There you go. But I guess there was an idea I talked to some of the guys, I think you were both involved, where I was talking about a structure I wanted to build as a wall display for things that people had made for me. And it was going to be based on this grid and uniform size boxes. And I'm suddenly going, so what I've just done is invented the same thing somebody else has just on a wall. But that's interesting in seeing where the crossover is. And yeah, the Gridfinity stuff, there's a serious rabbit warren to go down there and all sorts of stuff. So
yeah,
Zach Friedman's the printer, you know.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah. I've got plenty of reasons to get a printer. The problem is, people don't want reasons; they want money. that's the issue. Yeah, I'm not big enough to be sponsored by a print company. Let's put it that way.
Duncan, what about you?
Well, probably not so much this week, but more the last couple of months. I've just been absorbed by all things AI. I just can't stop watching YouTube videos and playing with these little tools that people have made, and just a little bit obsessed with it. Part of it is because it's my job now, which is weird to even say that out loud. But part of it is just pure fascination of how quickly things are moving. And well, yeah, it's basically that. It's so fast and so capable already, and it's going to be a blessing and a curse, as all big technology changes are. But it's sort of like invention of the internet level impact it's going to have. And a lot of it will be good and some of it will not be. And, you know, you've got the US election coming up next year. That's going to be interesting to see what happens there when it's so easy to fake someone's face and voice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just trying to find sort of useful things for it at the moment. And as soon as you discover something that might be of use, then there's something new along already. I'm just trying to encourage everyone I talk to sort of get involved in it and play with what's available and have a go and see what you can do. Just the ChatGPT is free, you know, you just talk to it, have a play with it and see what you can do. Yeah, the big boys get all the attention, like the image generators generally get all the news because of all sorts of reasons, because everyone's attracted to sort of visual things. But there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, so I just can't stop taking it in or trying to.
You have to have a chat with Dale in the chat, as said he and his team are building a number of cool LLMs.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's a big topic. There's so much going on. That's a whole podcast in itself. And there are probably 400 podcasts on AI.
I was going to say there's already quite a few, but maybe we'll have to make us walk one. Yeah. We've got 120 coming up in a couple of weeks, haven't actually fixed that one yet. Maybe we'll have to have an AI one.
Get you and Dave. If you ever get a chance to listen to Kevin Rose talking about AI, he is well worth a listen. He's the guy who back in the day founded the website Dig. I don't know if you remember Dig.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
But he then went through a whole thing where he was working for Google Ventures. He does a lot of angel investing and things like that. But a lot of what he's been working on recently is around the AI space. And he understands, because he's got access to so many of these founders and startups and things like that. His knowledge of the space is incredible. There is an episode of The Random Show with him and Tim Ferriss where they're talking about AI that's really interesting. They get quite drunk in it, which also helps. But no, Kevin Rose, his knowledge is very interesting on it.
Okay, good tip. I've written it down.
Yay. Right, well, we're going to head off to the after show. Oh, but in case anyone's wondering, Jamie is not ill. He is traveling this weekend. He may tell us a bit more about it next week. But it is not a problem. He hasn't quit or anything. He's just not here today and not said, easily
said accessing. Something about life's too short and wandered off. I can't remember what they...
Yeah. hopefully he'll be back next week if his travels are successful, etc. If he gets let back into the country and the like. So, we shall see with that. So we're going to head over to the after show in a moment and have a little bit more of a chat there. We'll talk about Jamie behind his back there. He's not subscribed to the after show.
There you go.
So we can say whatever we like there. Yeah. So if anyone does want to hear what we have to say about Jamie, then they'll have to sign up on patreon.com/makerswaffle. And they will get to find out. So we'll... people can go and listen to, obviously, Neil can be found at NME Woodworks and Duncan can be found at Little Hobby Shop. And they've got their own episodes, individual episodes, and they've both been on other group chats as well. So plenty, if you want to find out a bit more about them, you can go and find those ones. So we shall say goodbye for this week. Bye. Bye.